Coming up next on Tech News Today, Alphabet's big EU antitrust fine apparently didn't stunt its quarterly earnings very much. Microsoft is moving on from Microsoft Paint. Roomba is mapping your home and may sell that data to the highest bidder. And Renee Ritchie from iMore survived Pokemon Go Fest. All that more coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1816, recorded Monday, July 24th, 2017.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Are you looking to hire a tech professional? With ZipRecruiter, you can post to 100-plus job boards, including social networks, all with one single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/twit.
And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life, and that's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at RocketMortgage.com/TNT.
Welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we talk about all the news that's fit to talk about in regards to technology. I am Megan Maroney.
I'm Jason Howells. That last asterisk there. Mm-hmm. Asterisk. Oh, by the way, related to tech. That's why it's in the name.
And hi. You're back. You were gone for so ages.
I know. It seemed like just yesterday that I was out for jury duty. And then I visited family. I was gone for a week. And I'm happy to be back, though. You know, it's hard to kind of get integrated back into the technology news when you've been gone for a week because it moves fast.
I'll give you the shorthand.
Yes,
please. The cliff notes. Elon Musk said something crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Some phones got delayed.
Okay.
People are over and undervaluing Apple.
Okay.
And the iPhone 8 is coming out, and it's going to be shaped like an elephant.
And Burke has one more to add, and that is Uber. Just Uber happened, as usually happens. Mm-hmm. I feel like every week there's something Uber, whether we choose to talk about it or not. You know what else is happening right now?
What?
Earnings Palooza.
Yeah.
I think it kind of kicked off a little bit today. Alphabet may have been issued a $2.7 billion fine last month by European Union regulators for antitrust violations, but that didn't stop the company from reporting over $26 billion in revenue for the first 3 months of the year. That's up 21% year over year. Even with that fine, from the EU, Alphabet's operating income still hit $4.1 billion for the quarter. Alphabet also announced that Google CEO Sundar Pichai is going to join the company's board of directors, and that's just kind of proof that Pichai has been doing very well for the company in his two and some odd years at the lead of Google itself. So much of Alphabet and the numbers that they post on their earnings are directly related to Google and to, you know, the advertising that comes from Google. So it, you know, makes a lot of sense that Pichai would be involved.
Yeah, I mean, I am a big fan of Pichai, and I think he's done some great things in the company.
Mm-hmm.
Advertising is still their biggest area of growth. Mobile advertising, YouTube advertising, that doesn't seem to have run into any problems. I think that the EU thing is not over. Like, I think that their investors for sure are worried that there will be more regulations that they will have to pay more fines. So I think that's really the only thing that they have to worry about. The other Alphabet news that you missed out on was from the other bets while you were gone. Google is releasing 20 million mosquitoes in Fresno, sterile mosquitoes, in order to combat mosquito-borne viruses.
You're right, I did miss that.
Yeah, I know. And I thought if you missed it out there too, I thought I'd add it again. They're combating mosquitoes with more mosquitoes. First of all, male mosquitoes don't bite. That's a thing I learned. And so they're sterile. So when they mate with the female mosquitoes, those eggs never hatch.
But doesn't Google have something to do with, like, I don't know, world's information Are these mosquitoes carrying like little hard drives?
they're actually, yeah, the mosquitoes have our information, and then they found out that the FTC found out that these mosquitoes were carrying around our information, so Google wants to kill them.
That's, well, that makes sense now. Yeah. Okay, all right, now I understand how it all.
No, it's Verily, and they were carrying, you know, things like Zika.
Oh, okay. Well,
you don't want that.
No, I definitely don't want that. So let's see here. It was just August 2015 when Pichai became the CEO for Google. So that's what, two and a half years? And I guess a decent amount of Google's board of directors are filled with Googlers from the ins. You know, they've got a lot of people outside of that, but Sergey Brin, Larry Page, Eric Schmidt, Diane Greene, who's the head of Google Cloud Computing Unit. So Pichai would make the fifth Alphabet insider to actually join the board. And I think it makes perfect sense.
Yes.
He's been doing awesome. Including all of his work with mosquitoes.
Yeah, that was Verily. I think that's the bets that lost $772 million.
Yeah, good point.
But they lost less than they lost last quarter.
Yeah, losses dropped 10%.
Right, but still $772 million.
Yeah.
Moving on, 1985, it was the best of times. It was the worst of times. It was the year Microsoft first licensed a version of ZSoft's PC paintbrush in Windows 1.0. That's the program that we now know and love as Microsoft Paint. Paul Thurrott says the company plans to put an end to the venerable bad art program with Windows 10 Creators Edition, which comes out this fall. So I don't know if Windows Paint was the best of times or the worst of times for you. It was for sure the best of times for me. I loved Windows Paint. I used it just all throughout the 80s for all my bad art. And so now they're, what do they call it? What's the word they use? Deprecating it.
Yes, or sunsetting it.
Yeah.
But deprecating, yeah, feels a little bit more official.
You can still use it. They're just not going to regularly update it.
Right. Yeah, totally. You can keep your Windows XP machine because apparently that app is the best on XP from one person that who regularly uses MS Paint to make art. I read about him earlier today, and he's like, yeah, you got to keep the XP version because that's the one to go
with. Yeah, don't connect it to the internet while you're at it, please.
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe you don't need to. I mean, it's just Microsoft Paint after all. Paint 3D is going to be available still, so that's kind of like the next generation of this. But really, I mean, it's just not the same.
Mm-mm.
It's not the same, man.
A little paint history.
Yeah.
It could not save JPEGs, Microsoft Paint, until 1998, until Windows 98.
Wow.
That's a pretty shocker.
So you used to make art on MS Paint? I mean, like, I used it every once in a while.
Not like art like that.
I know. Look at that. Go ahead and click on that, and it'll zoom in, and then you go, whoa. Because, yeah, some people, man, they do some crazy stuff with Microsoft Paint. And some, like, I've seen, I actually also linked to a Business Insider article that compiled a bunch of stuff. There's, like, hyper-realistic stuff. And, I mean, when you look at the art that's created with MS Paint, you have to kind of remind yourself that a lot of these tools are very basic inside Paint. So the fact that they're able to do all of this really complex art using it, you're just like, how on earth? Like, my brain just doesn't work that way. But people are still putting out, like, this is like a version of the Star Wars poster for The Force Awakens. And, man, it just looks so good. It reminds me of, like, Sierra Online. You remember their games back in the 80s and 90s? They're, you know, very pixelated art, but totally hand-drawn with a computer. And it just looks beautiful in its own right. MS Paint is its own kind of art style, I think.
Yeah. You know, the crazy thing is, when I said art, I mean, I'm just talking about, just like, I can make the same art with Microsoft Paint than I can with like all these fancy like iPad programs and my Apple Pencil with no latency. And I'm just, I can have the most amazing tools or the kind of cruddiest tools and I would make the same art. So, but not these people.
It would be blocky lines, maybe a happy face or something. Yeah, no, I know this stuff is super impressive. There's a large community built around following and furthering kind of the art made with MS Paint.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of sad to see it, see it stop. But it's not going anywhere. Like we said, all you have to do is get a machine with XP. You don't have to get a machine with XP. I mean, you can have a more modern machine and have it still installed, but that's the one you want.
Everything up to Creator's Edition.
Yep.
Fall Creator's Edition you can have.
If you have to. But if you're a purist, XP. And you thought the Roomba would just be your robot vacuum. It turns out the Roomba could someday, soon, in fact, be an integral part of making your smart home even smarter. As of 2015, you may remember iRobot released a version of the RoboVacuum that had a camera and sensors for mapping the home to kind of keep it on track as it cleans. Now, Colin Angle, he's the CEO of iRobot Corp, that produces the Roomba, says it could someday sell those home maps to the big three, enabling devices by those companies to work better within the home thanks to those always updating maps from within the home in which they operate. So, you know, they're already tracking the home and understanding if this piece of furniture moved from here to there, or understanding that the window in this corner gets a lot of sunlight in the mid-afternoon but not in the morning, like all these pieces of information that could potentially be used to feed into IoT devices by other companies, making it all smarter, apparently.
So Roomba, our little innocent robot vacuum, has secretly been tracking us. And so this story is about how it's going. It figures out, it's mapping our rooms secretly, knowing that, you know, where the couch is in relation to the chair when we move it.
Potentially so, yeah.
Yeah, like depending on our moods, you know, when we kick it, it probably knows that. And I think that from this story, we can gather that it's also mapping all the dust and things that it's sucking up.
Oh, it knows that you are really dirty. Like, you drop things on the floor all the time. It knows that about you.
Right. It knows that when we decide to give our cats a ride on it or our ducks. I mean, how far? I think this is Roomba Gate. I think you're taking this you're taking the wrong angle.
Like, so are you afraid? Are you worried?
I don't want it secretly mapping. You know, that's what my Amazon Echo is for. For listening.
That's for all of my other IoT devices. Roomba, you're not allowed.
Yeah. No, it did make me think of Gattaca, though. That scene in Gattaca where they suck up the hair and that's how they, like, know the DNA of this guy that doesn't fit. And, you know, I think that's really...
The crossover, the Venn diagram of Roomba and Gattaca are very, you know, is a big crossover at this point.
I really missed you because I can't, like, propose these crazy conspiracy theories to, like, guest hosts. I have to wait for you.
It's okay. You can always unload those on me. Okay. Burke actually Burke for once has a very good point. No, I'm just kidding. He says, what else would you need to know? This reeks of desperation. Do you think this is kind of, okay, now, just a little data point around desperation and Roomba. Roomba currently has 88% of the U.S. RoboVac market. So Roomba's doing all right. iRobot's doing all right with the Roomba. However, there's a lot of low-cost competition that have come in and kind of threatened that the low-cost kind of RoboVacuums are getting nearly as good as the Roomba and don't cost between $300 to $900, which is what you have to pay for a Roomba. So there's position there in which competition can kind of start to eat away at Roomba. Do you think this data play is kind of a move of ensuring that doesn't happen, is a move of desperation, as Burke says?
No, I think they're doing all right. Like, I think they have garden robots. They have a lot of other, they have like a whole other, they do like robots that go into, we were talking about them on the screensavers, Leo and I, over the weekend. Like, they have, you know, they have aquatic robots. They have a lot. They're big, and I think that they're okay. Yeah, look, the robots that spray.
Pool cleaner robots.
They have STEM resources. I think they're okay. I think that they're okay. But mapping our, there's the pool cleaning robots. They've got everything.
I had a pool, I'd get one of those.
I think that iRobot is really positioned in, because they've been around for longer. Like, they've been the robots that people accepted into their house before anything else.
For cleaning things. And especially along that line, they have more than 1,000 patents around RoboVacuum technology, around object avoidance. And they're actually currently involved in lawsuits against Bissell, Black & Decker, Hoover, and more, some Chinese companies. Because they basically are coming from the standpoint that they've patented so much of how they've built up the Roomba before anybody else, that it's really hard to get into that game without somehow intruding on their patents that are kind of blanketing the space. So maybe that's a great form of protection for them as well.
But it is a good lesson that all of these companies are sucking up whatever information they can, vacuuming it up.
Yes. Hoovering it up. Yeah, I mean, it's a really, really good point. That data, the data that can be collected of you know, mapping data or data of how you use your technology, how, you know, all of those data points of how we're using all these pieces of technology result in data that is actually potentially very valuable. Mm-hmm. And that's always an alternate kind of way for these companies to profit. Mm-hmm. And so keep that in mind, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Forget Elon Musk's boring tube. Bloomberg reports that NASA wants to speed up your travel time with a new supersonic jet design, and they want to do it quietly and without breaking any windows or maddening any farm animals on the ground. Supersonic jet travel has been banned over U.S. soil since 1973 due to those loud sonic booms. Yep, they sound
or something like that.
NASA says they have the technology to reduce a sonic boom to the sound a Mercedes makes when it's on the highway. What does that sound like? Oh, good, good.
Or something like that.
in a plane that can get you from L.A. to New York in just 3 hours.
3 hours, L.A. to New York. Okay.
Yeah. What? It's
how
usually
long does
six
it
hours.
Normally? Okay, so that cuts it in half. Yeah. That's pretty darn. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this has been a big challenge and something that I just never considered it before. The fact that we do have the technology to take this aircraft a whole lot faster than it actually goes, but we're limited. It just never occurred to me that we're limited because of this like noise issue. The sonic boom is not only loud enough to be annoying, like we just proved, but also to potentially, you know, destroy windows and stuff like that.
And so, make farm animals really mad.
Yeah, if you're a farmer, you understand.
Mm-hmm.
NASA is proposing spending around $390 million over the course of 5 years to incentivize those who would build test planes to show off a demo like this. And then hopefully in 2022, they'll test it over six communities to see how they respond. But even if all of that happens, from what I was reading, there's this 1973 ban that was the result of the Concorde airplane, which happened in the 70s, 90 A-weighted decibels, so much louder and was much more of a noise nuisance. So the U.S. Government instituted a ban in 1973 after there were just hundreds of complaints around takeoff and landing with this aircraft. And so in order for, even if the technology is improved, I guess some of the language in this ban would have to be rewritten or undone altogether in order to allow for aircraft of this type to fly over the United States.
Yeah, so they say they can. I mean, you did an excellent Mercedes sound, but it's 60 to 65 A-weighted decibels. That's what the sound will be. Does that mean anything to you, 60?
Yeah, I mean, well, especially when you compare it to the 90 decibels. Yeah, exactly, yeah. Which would be the loud booming sound, mm-hmm, that people were hearing with the Concorde. Yeah, you know, the article actually had a few different ways to put it. That was one of the ways, and I meant to write it down and I didn't. But ultimately, like a noisy cafeteria, you know, the kind of murmurs and stuff like that. But then you have to imagine that's kind of a continuous sound that rolls over. So people would have to be okay with that noise intrusion. I'm guessing it probably wouldn't be that bad. And especially if you can cut travel time in half, I think I'm guessing people would be okay with that.
Yeah.
With the farm animals, though, that's the important question.
Right. And it certainly seems like it's going to get there faster than the boring tube. It uses fluid dynamics modeling that was just discovered in the last decade, which we talk so much about, like the, you know, the vacuum that's, you know, going to be our Internet of Things device. But what I've been thinking about a lot lately is all of the technology that we've wanted for so long that really, like, people have had the ideas, but it's, mm-hmm, been all this new technology that the recent technology that we need to develop in order to make it happen. Like on the screensavers, we talked to a woman who is part of the solar probe, the NASA solar probe that they're going to the sun. Mm-hmm. And it's like they had this idea before NASA even existed, but the technology had to catch up. And to me, that is really interesting because we talk a lot about how like these companies are inventing problems that we don't have and solving them with technology.
Right, yeah.
Whereas to me, like I want to think more about the technology that's catching up to the problems we've had for a long time.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I did find it in here. Luxury car on the highway, which you mentioned, or background conversation in a busy restaurant. So, I mean, we've all been in a busy restaurant. You know what to expect when you're a busy restaurant and you have that level of noise. Are you okay with that level of noise suddenly coming out of nowhere while you're outside? I'm guessing it wouldn't be that bad, mm-hmm, especially not compared to a sonic boom.
Right. Well, after the break, the crowd boos Niantic CEO at Pokemon Go Fest, Renee Ritchie from iMore, is here to tell us how it looked from ground zero at the event. But first, let's take a minute to thank ZipRecruiter, the sponsor of this episode. If you are in charge of hiring, you have the most important job in a company. The people you hire can make or break your business. I think you already know that if you're in charge of hiring. But do you know where to post jobs to find the most qualified candidates? You do not want to hire the first person who comes your way. Countless research, so much research, especially lately, shows the benefits of hiring a diverse workforce. So you can revamp your job description, change some of the keywords in there. You can vow to improve your interview style. But what if the right people never come to you? The right people might not come to you. Sometimes they never will, but you have to go find them. But how? ZipRecruiter will connect you to the most qualified candidates for any job, including highly sought after tech professionals. They are out there. You just need a little bit of help finding them. Everybody needs a little bit of help. With just one click, you can post your job to 100 plus job sites. ZipRecruiter's powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your job better than anyone else. And that's why ZipRecruiter is different. So unlike some other job sites that you've seen or heard about or maybe even used, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. In fact, over 80% of jobs posted on ZipRecruiter can get a qualified candidate in just 24 hours. No more juggling emails or calls to your office. All you have to do is screen, rate, and manage the candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Connect with a wide variety of professionals, including IT experts, and then take your company to the next level. Do it today. More than 200 million applications have been delivered. So if you are currently searching for a job, ZipRecruiter will help you find your future job in any industry, including technology, government, business, finance, and more. It works both ways. They will help you find a job, and they will help that job find you. So upload your resume and apply with just one click. Check out ZipRecruiter's blog for recruiting tips and some good career advice. So find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, you can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. What are you waiting for? It's free. You can try it free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/twit, T-W-I-T. That's ZipRecruiter.com/twit. And we thank ZipRecruiter for their support.
So around 20,000 Pokemon Go players made their way to Niantic's Pokemon Go Fest in Chicago this weekend. Renee Ritchie from iMore was there, and he lived to tell the tale. He joins us now. Welcome, Renee.
You know, Andy Nocco called me an embedded reporter, and it almost felt like that.
Well, that was going to be my first question. Were you there for business or pleasure? What do you think?
I was covering it for Android Central and iMore because it's been as popular as iPhone or any, you know, or Samsung for us over the last year. So we wanted to make sure that we had a presence.
Wow. I mean, are you a big Pokemon Go player? Would you say that was a motivating reason as well? Or
I might be level 40, Jason. I might have a problem.
See, that does nothing for me. I don't even know what that number is.
So it's like the highest level you can get in the current game.
Okay.
Okay, I have a question. Yeah. Here's a litmus test. I have a litmus test. If you had to give up Pokemon Go or all of your Apple Watch bands, which would go first?
Bye-bye, Pokemon. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
You can't mess with Apple Watch.
Okay.
Right. I'm a human being, Megan. I'm a human being.
Not an animal.
We're getting to the choice point here. We understand a little bit deeper. So first of all, before we get to the chaos, let's start with the cream of the crop, I suppose. Even though I'm not going to understand at all any of this, there were apparently some rare Pokemon there. What did you find?
Yeah, so when you first got there was a Heracross, which is usually restricted to Southern Florida and South America. And then there's this Pokemon called Unknown, which can take the form of any of the 26 letters of the alphabet. And they made the ones that spell out the word Chicago available at the event, which was kind of cute.
Okay, yeah, that's creative. Yeah. All right, so that's good stuff. Now the bad stuff. Thunderstorms, they were on the forecast, but that didn't happen. So it was total crisis averted, right? Everything went...
Yeah, well, it was raining when we first... Because so the early access, which was supposed to be Sprint's early access, and some of the media tours were at 9 o'clock, and it had stopped raining by then. It was still overcast, which is actually nice because it's blisteringly hot in Chicago otherwise. It did get hotter throughout the day, though.
Totally. You don't want that like sharp sun beating down on you all day.
No, and it does because Grant Park is fairly open. There are a few areas of shade, but the main parts of Grant Park are wide open.
It looks like it. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the technology behind this event. And I heard even I was like up in the woods and I got very little cell coverage, you know, at a family reunion. I still kind of heard a little bit about this. I heard it being compared to the Fyre Festival for nerds. I don't know how much of that is true, but apparently the cell networks were not able to keep up with this. What happened?
So they were confident because they hold Lollapalooza at that park, and that Lollapalooza takes up about four or five times as much space and has probably four or five times as many people as Pokemon Go. But I think what they didn't understand is just how much data, how many socket connections, just how much it's pulling and how much it's hitting those towers. So AT&T went down hard. Sprint, Verizon went down hard. T-Mobile had pockets and moments of doing – probably did better than the other three, but they were all being hit hard. So they – throughout the day, they were trying to add repeaters, and they beam signal into there. They have a couple antennas, but they have dishes everywhere that they're beaming more capacity into, and it couldn't keep up. So there was like two phases of the problem. First, you had to be able to get data at all, and if you could, Pokemon Go servers started going down, so you couldn't log in, you couldn't interact with the objects, you couldn't take part in catching the Pokemon or in the raids, and eventually that led to a huge chant of "We can't play," and you had thousands and thousands of people just chanting that.
Did it get violent?
No, I mean, they did use adult language, you know, viewer discretion advised. But, you know, all in all, it was real. Like, they were making the best of it. They stayed orderly. It stayed civil. I didn't see any pockets of actual unrest. There were just a lot of really sad people. And, you know, to their credit, John Hankey, who did Google Maps and Google Earth and Ingress and now Pokemon Go, he was there walking around in the beginning. He sat there in the sun signing autographs for hours and hours and hours. Even when people were yelling, you know, the worst stuff at him, he didn't flinch. He stayed there. He stayed engaged. And sort of anything can fail. Any company can fail. And so I feel it's how you deal with that that sort of tells your story. And both him and John Quigley, their CMO, were there all the time. There was nothing on background. Everything was on the record. They were talking to people and they were trying to do the best they could.
That's awesome. So this is 20,000 people all in a single park, basically hitting these servers. Everyone's staring at their phones for hours. What's that like? Or did that feel normal? Because I feel like in this day and age, everybody stares at their phones, but a concentrated amount of 20,000 people all staring at their phone at once, that kind of be, I don't know, a little unsettling.
That wasn't the way. So I didn't really notice because I figure like any park with a large amount of people would probably be doing that anyway. Yeah, but they were doing it like in Pikachu costumes. And, you know, so a lot of people were dressed up or, you know, had their families or were wearing T-shirts. There was a whole bunch of people in kilts, too. I mean, it was a spectacle to be sure. And I think that drew more attention than just people staring at their phones. And most of their phones weren't working, so they had it at their side, sort of with angry looks on their face.
That's true. They had to look up from time to time.
So one of the headlines I saw was, you know, Pokemon Go's had problems at launch, and those problems have never been fixed. Would you agree with that, or is that a bit of an exaggeration?
So they have been. So initially, the famous story is that they thought they would get so many users. They planned to get, I think, 10 times the amount of that, and they got 100 times. And we haven't figured out scale. I mean, we can look at Pokemon Go and say they failed, but I think there's very few companies in the world. I mean, they're on Google, as far as I know. They're using Google servers that can handle that kind of capacity. It's just this stuff, the technology, the infrastructure is not designed to scale this way, and they keep hitting the limits of it. And that's just, it's terrible for them. I mean, blessed whoever follows them. They'll have a much easier time of doing this the second time around. But Niantic keeps sort of hitting these things. And I think that, you know, they planned for it, but they still got hit. And unfortunately, as we know from trying to use an iPhone on AT&T and all those stories, when you hurt these towers, it's not like they stop letting people on. They just crash for everybody. And that this seems like a fundamental flaw in the technology to me.
And and like you were saying, it sounded like, at least on Niantic's side, they were working on the other side behind the scenes to kind of scale things up, obviously, but to also add kind of extra incentives. Talk a little bit about kind of what they made up for the chaos earlier in the day, later in the day, and I guess over the next 48 hours, right?
Yeah, so the event was a little bit complicated to start with. So basically, people in the park would try to catch certain Pokemon to unlock bonuses that people around the world could then extend to 24 or 48 hours, unlock a challenge that if the people in Chicago defeated would unlock this mystery thing for everybody, which turned out to be the legendary Pokemon that a lot of people were waiting for. But what happened is none of that could work, and I don't think they were going to chance making like this big legendary thing inside the park anymore. So all the bonuses were unlocked. They were unlocked for 48 hours. They're refunding the tickets to, you know, for everybody who bought for a ticket, not the airfare, not the hotel. So people are still out money, but they refunded all the tickets. They're giving everybody $100 in in-game currency, $100 US in in-game currency for their troubles. And they're also giving one of these legendary Pokemon to everybody who registered for the event. And that's one of the problems they had to deal with, because people do GPS spoofing to try to play the game in locations where they aren't. So they had QR codes you could scan to make sure you were physically there, and there were some rumors that maybe that was part of the problem with trying to have that much control over the environment was causing part of the problem.
Yeah. Now, you kind of alluded to this just a few minutes ago, but I like, as I read through about this story and kind of took it in a little bit, we realize right now that AI, artificial intelligence, has this big push going on. And yes, Pokemon Go was maybe not the first to kind of bring it to a more mainstream audience, but it was definitely one of the big examples. What does this experiment say about the future of AI as we kind of lead more into this realm where more and more people are getting involved in it? Is it just that the software makers need to do a better job supporting it on the back end? Is it that cell phone companies need to do more to boost their signals on the back end? Like, what lesson could be learned here?
So I don't think this was a problem with that. That's more of a display technology, and I don't think a lot of people actually use the AR environments in this. I think they just play in the game. But it's those parts, it's that interaction, it's those constant connections to the server. Because if you have 20 people battling the same Pokemon, it's got to make sure everybody is in sync and the same thing is happening, and it's registering it and it's unlocking it. And if any of those connections go down, it reminds me of that story 2-3 years ago, maybe it was longer now, when Amazon went down and it turned out that their gossip protocol didn't have a checksum and one went bad and it took down the part that was designed to show you that everything was up, took everything down. It was just, there's all, when you're dealing with that multitude of people and that multitude of connections, any small thing can be, disastrous. And I think that's what we're seeing now. They turned off animations in the game, some of the animations in the game, to try to improve it. But I think the display layer still worked fine for them. It was just all the constant connections to their server that ended up, just not working out.
Yeah, and how they manage all of those simultaneously. Certainly a problem that I would have no input on. So I respect that people are working behind the scene to make it work. I know, especially, and Burke was pointing this out, how hard they got booed from the stage repeatedly. Yeah. They're working under intense pressure. You have to imagine they've coordinated, put up this event with that many people in one place just to play the game, and then it doesn't work.
It's not just them, it's the Pokemon company, right? Like, this is not their property, and the Pokemon company is incredibly protective of their intellectual property, and I'm sure they're not happy that this event didn't turn out the way the Pokemon events in Japan, for example, have.
Right. Well, if at first it doesn't succeed, try again, I suppose.
Absolutely.
And then you'll go to that one too, and you'll have to let us know all about it.
Yeah, well, I mean, hopefully they learn from this. I want to see somebody, whether it's Niantic or somebody else, start succeeding, because I think we're only going to be playing more and more games that are as connected as our society has become.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Renee Ritchie from iMore.com. Always great getting you on, man. Thank you so much for taking a few moments and taking one for the team at the Fire Festival for Nerds.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Thank you, Megan.
All right. Take care, Renee. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Up next, Michael Phelps, the swimmer, totally raced a shark. Like, for reals, he raced a shark. Kind of, sort of. We'll talk about that. But first, let's take a minute to thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. They are the sponsor of this episode. The mortgage experience wasn't keeping up with the times. If you've ever gone through this process, it's kind of dated. It needs a client-focused technological revolution. And that's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence that you will need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan, if you want to do it that way. It's simple. It allows you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. It's also convenient. Their trusted partners allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. They've got the relationships in place. So you just you push the button. It starts on towards the path of kind of giving you the information that you need around your mortgage. It's powerful. Whether you're looking to buy a first home or even your 10th, maybe, Rocket Mortgage is able to perform thousands of calculations in seconds. And it's all based on your income, your assets, and your credit. Rocket Mortgage analyzes all that information and the home loan options for which you qualify. And then you can find the one that's just right for you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/TNT That's rocketmortgage.com/TNT. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support of Tech News Today.
Ben sent us an email about my discussion last week with Owen J.J. Stone about regulating a Hyperloop from D.C. to New York. Owen doubted that it would be possible. I think he made several references to people's brains being turned into jellies inside a tube. Ben writes, it is completely possible and it will happen if regulation will allow it. Elon has said before, and it should be common knowledge, that the acceleration will be gradual. The whole point of the Hyperloop is to reduce air resistance while increasing speed. In order to achieve a near vacuum, one atmosphere has to be achieved. In order to protect against the water table, a level of 5 to 6 atmospheres has to be achieved, which is doable. I am going to have to believe you on that, Ben. I don't know. I'll believe it when I see it. Elon Musk has been talking about the Hyperloop since 2013, and we haven't seen anything. But he isn't developing it necessarily himself. Like, he has these contests. And the next contest, it's too late to sign up to participate, but you can watch it. I'm super excited about it. It's August 25th and 26th is the next competition. That's here in California, in near SpaceX.
If it has the potential to melt your brain, I believe is what Owen put in here. I don't think it's going to go very far. It's a hunch. I don't think it's going to work. But if they can get around the whole brain melt thing,
yeah.
I think we're onto something, because I think it's super cool technology. And I love the way that they're going about it. I love kind of the way that they're, you know, the different teams are coming at it, different approaches, and may the best Hyperloop win.
I would like to take a supersonic jet.
Yeah, see, you've got options. Mm-hmm. Supersonic jet. Your brain doesn't melt in a supersonic jet, as far as I know.
No. Well, I mean, just we don't know yet, but we'll find out. I mean, the new supersonic jets. Yeah. Without the sonic boomless supersonic jet.
Yeah, I suppose we don't know about that specifically yet.
Yeah,
but
we don't know.
TNT's fan of the day is Brittany Isabel, who sent us this picture on Twitter saying, watching reruns while waiting to watch it live later tonight. Total Megan Maroney fangirl now. Oh. You've got a fangirl.
Isabel just tweeted at me. I know she's watching live because she says she also likes Microsoft Paint.
Oh,
she loved it.
She's connected.
So, yes.
She's connected
to
the show. That's awesome.
Can we look at the picture again for a second? Because there was someone on Twitter took issue to the way her monitor looked like it was about to fall off.
Does look a little tilted there.
And I didn't want anyone to be worried about that. She says it's just the angle. Thanks,
Brian.
Brian fixed it for you. Thank you, Brian.
Is there more than the eye can see in this picture?
It was just the angle that at. Like, it's on a stand. She says, don't worry. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. All right. We're happy that we can solve that problem for you, Brittany. Thanks for sending that in. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup, and we'll critique it if you post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook. Use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT, and we will find it.
It's Shark Week! Yay! In honor of this once-a-year celebration, swimmer Michael Phelps raced a shark, except it was a digital simulation of a shark, and everyone is really mad about it. According to the New York Times, Phelps swam alone, but a computer-generated image of a shark swimming at shark speed was digitally inserted alongside Phelps. Total fake news, Discovery Channel.
Wow, there's a lot of deep sighs going on in this room, so apparently people really are upset about this.
I wanted to see Michael Phelps almost get eaten by a shark.
But did you really think that there was going to be a shark swimming right next to Michael Phelps?
Well, I never had a chance to think about it because I don't watch the Discovery Channel, and I never heard it until afterwards, and everyone was mad about it, and even madder than they were about Pokemon Go not working at Pokemon Fest. It's cool to look at it and imagine that he is swimming next to a shark.
I mean, it looks pretty convincing, but I mean, they're at the very end, like they hit the very end, and then the shark does this like majestic leap into the air. So, you know, obviously it's totally produced stuff. There it is, majestic leap as it wins by 2 seconds. But still, it's cool. I mean, you know, at the core, they had to lead from what I was reading, a shark along the path with meat, or I can't remember what animal it was, but anyways, they dangled
person,
basically not a person as far as I know, but also not a carrot dangled in front of the shark, food that a shark would actually like. And they had to estimate how fast it would take a shark to do that distance by that, and they came up to the figure that he ended up racing against. So I mean, there's some validity to it. It's just he's not racing an actual shark.
Yeah. I mean, next thing you're gonna tell me that like Blake Lively in The Shallows wasn't actually being chased by a shark, which I don't believe either. Like, that was a real shark. Have you seen The Shallows?
Cricket.
You haven't seen Cricket. The Shallows?
No.
Anyone? No. The Shallows? It
just getting Brian, a lot of groans in here.
The resident millennial hasn't even seen The Shallow. You can sign if you have Amazon Prime, sign up for a free week of what's it on?
Stars.
Thank you, John. Sign up for a free week of Stars and watch Blake Lively in The Shallows. It is amazing.
Is he a magician?
Blake Lively is a woman. She was a Gossip Girl.
I apparently know nothing about this. This is a world I don't understand.
Yeah, the shark and Blake Lively's bitten thigh star in the movie. There we go.
Okay. All right. Now
please,
I understand.
Everyone watch it. And I'm then, curious. Of course, thank you, Mike. Deep Blue Sea, my other favorite shark movie where the sharks
Deep
get
Blue Sea.
Smarter.
Deep Blue Sea is good. Burke, I think, has a problem with the fact that the promo said shark. And actually, yeah, I watched an interview with Michael Phelps on one of the late shows. And I don't remember him actually mentioning that, like, he wasn't actually racing against a shark. Like, he was very careful to not say that. So, I mean, there is a little bit of misleading going on here, I think.
If you watch the video,
I
it's totally,
being
yeah,
disappointed
yeah,
by
it's
it.
Fake news.
Yeah.
And this is the worst kind of fake news. I think we can all agree.
Yes, the Michael Phelps not actually racing a shark, Shark Week thing. Totally.
So, I prefer Bark Week. Which
is
just dogs, more dogs, especially on Twitter.
Okay.
Hashtag Bark Week.
Yes.
Check it out.
Keep sending me your potential adoption picks for dogs because we're in the market.
Right.
I'm
if you
want
to give away
you,
your dog,
anybody,
give it to Jason.
Let me know. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us, tnt@twit.tv. Leave us a short voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW, and find us on Twitter at TechNewsTodayTV.
And hey, while you're at it, just go ahead and subscribe. I mean, you won't, you know, it doesn't cost you nothing. twit.tv/TNT. Subscribe to our show. And if you want to tweet at me about how much you loved The Shallows, please do. I'm at Megan Maroney.
And maybe tweet me a trailer or something so I can understand what it actually is. I'm at Jason Howell. Thanks to our technical director and editor today. Yes? Brian? Yeah? Oh, no. See, I never know anymore. Technical director is Brian Burnett. Editor is Kevin. And Burke is here along with Jeremy B, actually. John's in here as well, helping out in the studio. Thanks to all of you because you guys are great. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye, everybody.